To Deloria's way of thinking, not only overkill, but the entire Clovis first theory is a theoretical Rube Goldberg device. There's this perfect moment when the ice-free corridor magically appears just before the land bridge is covered by water, he said. And the Paleo-Indians, who are doing fine in Siberia, suddenly decide to sprint over to Alaska. And then they sprint through the corridor, which, just in time for them, has been replenished with game. And they keep sprinting so fast that they overrun the hemisphere even faster than the Europeans did. And this even though they didn't have horses, because they were so busy killing them all. He laughed. And these are the same people who say traditional origin tales are improbable. Activist critiques like those from Denny and Deloria have had relatively little impact on mainstream archaeologists and anthropologists. In a sense, they were unnecessary. Scientists themselves have launched such a sustained attack on the primacy of Clovis, the existence of the ice-free corridor, and the plausibility of overkill, that the Clovis consensus has shattered, probably irrecoverably. From today's vantage, the attack began, paradoxically, with the publication in 1986 of a landmark pro-Clovis paper in Current Anthropology by a linguist, a physical anthropologist, and a geneticist. The linguist attracted special attention. Students of languages had long puzzled over the extraordinary variety and fragmentation of Indian languages. California alone was the home of as many as 86 tongues, which linguists have classified into between 5 and 15 families. The schemes disagree with one another. No one family was dominant. By contrast, all of Europe has just 4 language families: Indo-European, Finno-Ugric, Basque, and Turkic, with the great majority of Europeans speaking an Indo-European tongue. Across the Americas, Indians spoke some 1,200 separate languages that have been classified into as many as 180 linguistic families. Linguists had long wondered how Indians could have evolved so many languages in the 13,000 years since Clovis, when Europeans had evolved many fewer in the 40,000 years since the arrival of humans there. In the first part of the 1986 article, Joseph H. Greenberg, a linguist at Stanford, proclaimed that the profusion of idioms was more apparent than real. After 4 decades of comparing Native American vocabularies and grammars, he had concluded that Indian languages belong to just 3 main linguistic families: Aleut, spoken by northern peoples in a broad band from Alaska to Greenland; Nadene, spoken in western Canada and the U.S. Southwest; and Amerind, much the biggest family, spoken everywhere else, including all of Central and South America. The 3 linguistic stocks, Greenberg said, represent separate migrations. According to Greenberg's linguistic analysis, Paleo-Indians had crossed over Beringia not once, but thrice. Using glottochronology, he estimated that the ancestors of Aleuts had crossed the strait around 2000 BC, and that the ancestors of Nadene had made the journey around 7000 BC. As for Amerind, Greenberg thought, "We are dealing with a time period probably greater than 11,000 years." But it was not that much greater, which indicated that the ancestors of Amerind-speaking peoples came over at just about the time that Clovis showed up in the archaeological record. Clovis first, yes, but Clovis the first of 3. In the same article, Christy G. Turner II, a physical anthropologist at Arizona State, supported the 3 migration scheme with dental evidence. All humans have the same number and type of teeth, but their characteristics, incisor shape, canine size, molar root number, the presence or absence of grooves on tooth faces, differ slightly in ways that are consistent within ethnic groups. In a fantastically painstaking process, Turner measured 28 key crown and root traits in more than 200,000 Indian teeth. He discovered that Indians formed 3 New World dental clusters, corresponding to Greenberg's Aleut, Nadene, and Amerind.